Hello, I'm Floyd Maxwell, justthinkit.com, bringing you a Floydcast number 49 for January 19, 2015. We had talked about the Marriott hotels. They had been blocking people's access to Wi-Fi so that they could charge people for Wi-Fi. Some hotels or motels, they don't charge anything. They just give you free Wi-Fi. Starbucks or various places, they just give you free Wi-Fi. It's no big deal, right? Marriott was charging people up to $1,000 per device to get online. So they got sued, and they had to pay a whopping fine of $600,000. I'm astonished there wasn't more zeros, like two more zeros on that one. Well, wonderful Marriott, the story headline says, they do a U-turn over Wi-Fi hotspot blocks. There's a lot of rubbish in the article, but here's the key line. Marriott International listens to its customers, and we will not block guests from using their personal Wi-Fi devices at any of our managed hotels. Reading all that, I was realizing that Marriott International, Marriott 786, International 448, 235 Total 5 Destiny. Just imagine, you know, this is the age we live in, the corporate age, where corporations will do whatever they want. They'll rip you off to the tune of $1,000 per device, just because they can. It's horrific. This is the age we live in. There's really only one punishment for Marriott, and that is for no one to ever go there again, and for them to go out of business. That's the only proper punishment. That fine was a joke. Obviously, I'm never going to go there again. I have a memory, I can remember that. I had talked in a previous Floydcast about choosing to avoid to do things that waste your time. These days, if you study YouTubes and if you study stuff that gets built up as like, wow, this is a great thing in the press, you'll see very consistently that it's stuff that wastes your time. It's amazing, and it wastes your time. In other words, it is harmless to them, so of course they're going to promote it. It's like the circus. The circus is harmless to them. There's literally no threat at all. A strong man is weak when it comes to taking on the 1%. It's something to keep in mind. So here was an example. This story was on Wired. Man creates a teeming, tiny city out of paper, one building at a time. Now I'll have the link to the story. His paper folding is impressive, or his building with paper is impressive. And it's just spectacularly useless. Alright, I'm going to do three sports stories. Home of Carolina Panthers head coach Ron Rivera catches fire. Early indications suggest the fire was accidental. Okay, so, you know, arson is something that is very commonly started. Like, there's some huge statistic, the number of fires that are started on purpose, especially in businesses. So, let's look at the guy's name. So, they say his name is Ron Rivera, but from Wikipedia, he's born Ronald Eugene Rivera. Ronald 731, Eugene 933, Rivera 641, when you add it all up, 415 total, 5 destiny. From his legal name and the way he was born, we can tell that this fire was an accident. It's just the kind of thing a 5 destiny attracts. This story was from this morning. Actually, the next two were from this morning. Aussie golf star Allenby kidnapped, beaten, and dumped in a park. Australian golfer Robert Allenby is recovering after being kidnapped, beaten, robbed, and dumped in a park in Honolulu. There was a tournament in Honolulu. I think it was a tournament of champions. It's possible he was there for a different tournament, but the tournament of champions was for everyone who won in golf last year. So they are all invited to a special limited number of players tournament, end of the year tournament. Allenby is a well-known golfer. These guys, when they get to the point that you know the golfer's name, these guys have made millions of dollars. Allenby has probably made, I'm just going to, you know, wild guess. Yeah, millions of dollars. So you tend to think they've arrived, they're successful, life is good. Let's work out his name. Robert, 246, Allenby, 628. These are very good names. Add them together, 865 total, 5 destiny. Just like the previous sports person. And, you know, this person's from Australia. They're more formal there. I once did a little bit of business dealing with a guy from New Zealand, neighbor to Australia, and his name was David Harris. I might even have talked about this in a Floydcast where I tried to call him Dave because it would have done him some favors. It would have, you know, made his mind basically a little more open and flexible, broad, and would have given him a better destiny. He specifically told me his name was David. Anyway, so Robert Allenby is probably not Rob, Bob, or anything else. And so that five destiny, that's his working destiny. One of the things about golfers is they have to travel a lot. They just live on the road for months of the year. And as you can see, playing golf in Honolulu in December or January, golf, there's somewhere in the world where it's warm. And they can play it pretty much the year round. Well, when you got a five destiny, you're the guy who's going to play it the year round. There are some players that they only play a few tournaments and that's it. They got enough money and they stay home with their wife and kids, with the husband and kids. Some people, if they are on the road, they're making a truly large amount of money and they're successful and then they're getting endorsements and everything else. I've never seen Robert Allenby get an endorsement. The point is that a lot of people get sort of stuck in the middle in a no man's land where, yes, you are a professional. Yes, you are making, you know, quite a bit of money, but what is your quality of life? But of all the places to be attacked, Hawaii, that story's a little bit shocking. Five destiny, not shocking. All right, another story from this morning. Actor and fitness instructor Greg Plitt struck and killed by train. He recently starred in the Bravo show Workout. He also appeared in the network's upcoming reality series Friends to Lovers, which premieres Monday. This guy, I guess, was a bit of, you know, sort of a fitness freak. He also appeared with Sylvester Stallone in some movie, and, you know, you look at him, the picture of him, he's a jock. Elsewhere in the article, it said that they were taking pictures of a train, apparently. He was dressed in all black. His friend, or one of the people he was with, witnessed him getting hit by the train. Greg, 551, last name Plitt, P-L-I-T-T, 955. Add them together, 516 total, 6 destiny. Okay, so here's a guy where he has a 6 total and a 6 destiny. And so this guy, for the most part, his life's been all right. And sure enough, he's an actor, and he was in an upcoming reality series. He was an ongoing actor, which is not easy. Ask Macaulay Culkin. But within that good destiny, he has two very bad names. Two of the worst possible names. Greg 550 and Hell is 551. Tremendously driven and intense. That person can't sit still. I once played intramural hockey. I mean, I played hockey quite a bit, but I just remember playing intramural hockey. It was the chemical engineers versus other teams. There was like a league, the engineers league. And so we played the students from the other departments. I played defense at that time. And my other defensive partner was Greg. I don't even remember Greg's last name at the moment. But what I remember, so this is a guy on my team. What I remember is that frequently I'd be skating along. This guy would suddenly be skating toward me, and instead of avoiding me, recognizing I'm on the same team, he would check me. He would hit me with his body. At the time, I knew the numbers. I knew what was going on, unlike anybody else there. For anybody else there, it's just an accident. Greg 551, the one quality is sort of, when you push them, they'll be confrontational. They'll take you on head on. The two qualities, the opposite. They'll do anything but take you on head on. So when he was skating along, his mind not really where it should be, with that Greg, that five-ish mind, your mind's all over the place. He's not noticing me, even though we're on the same team. And then when he suddenly, I'm getting close to him or he's getting close to me, in his mind, all he's thinking is, there's a guy coming towards me or we're about to hit, hit him. The thing is, he did this several times. I then had to avoid him the rest of the time that we played together. One of those unforgettable little moments that illustrates the numbers really well. So the point is, this guy was creating accidents on the ice with his own teammates. It's one thing with the players in the other team. Things can definitely happen. It's a very fast game. The ice surface is not very big. You're skating very fast, so you have a lot of energy behind yourself. You got sticks that you're wielding around. You know, you can have a confrontation with the other team. But with your own player? This was the only guy, and I played for years. This is the only guy I ever played with who routinely would confront his own players. Greg. Wow. What a tremendous disservice to a human being to give them a name like that. All right, Plit, 9-5-5. It's the same as Jim, the 9 adding intensity to the 5. So like this guy already has Hell for a first name. Now he has a more 5-ish than normal last name and a 5 expression number, the destiny number of the last name. In other words, the environment the last name puts you into. I was going to say this guy's a double dose of 5, but it's really like 4 doses of 5. So you don't even want 1. And this guy, by my little measurement, has 4 doses of 5. Oh, and in his total, 516, he has a 5 in there as well. So he literally has 3 5s out of 6 positions. But the intensity of the particular combinations, if you know the 5 quality, you know this guy. So even though he had a, quote, good destiny, quote, he gets hit by a moving object. I mean, what are you doing on the train tracks? I'm going to guess, you know, they said he was wearing all black. Well, wearing all black doesn't matter in the daytime. So I'm going to guess that they're at nighttime. So you're on train track. Now, I worked on railways, so I mean, I know exactly the environment. You're saying you're on the tracks, trains are coming, you're supposedly taking pictures of them. You're not aware of how close you are to the tracks? Trains are enormous. In other words, you don't need to be right on the edge of the track to get a picture of a train. It just shows the sort of the harebrained lack of thinking when you have names like the Greg especially. I bet you, you know, this was a Greg accident. Because for one, the Greg with the one quality there, the injuries occur to the senses of the head and the extremities. Well, your head is an extremity, and I bet he got hit in the head by the train. I mean, that would kill you pretty quick. You know, there've been stories where trains run over someone's arm and leg, and they don't die. It's the trunk of your body or your head that are going to take you out. I just can't imagine someone being anywhere near a train. Train tracks themselves. I've been on train tracks even as a teenager, and I was ultra paranoid about it and careful about it. I just can't imagine being a grown-up, and a train is coming. And you know it's coming. You can hear it. I mean, it's nighttime, I assume. And the lights of a train, by the way, they use aircraft landing lights or equivalent. You can see these lights a mile away in the daytime. In the daytime. These are ultra bright lights. There's just no excuse, except he wanted to take a photo. The 5 has no fear of high-speed things, dangerous things. If anything, the 5 gets a kick out of it. Well, that kick killed him. You know, he just has 5s everywhere. So for him, doing something 5-ish is normal. Doing something risky and involving something that could kill you, moving objects, that was normal to this guy by his name. So all those 3 stories, all sports individuals, you know, people with lots of money, successful, right? And just these bizarre things happening to them. Their house burns down. I mean, I bet you that coach had a very expensive house. These guys make millions a year. That's all gone. All those memories, all those photographs of your kids are all gone. There's a huge cost to that. Yeah, you're insured, but the disruption of your family, you got to start again. And that's the story of the 5 destiny is things blow up and you have to start again. Things blow up and you have to start again. Your whole life. And then Allenby, this golfer, I'm sure this guy is just as tip-top, straight, prim, polite, gentlemanly, nice as you will meet on the face of the earth, but 5 destiny. All right, I'm getting warmed up now. My first story I was going to talk about, I wasn't warmed up yet to talk about. Now I am. You know, at the end of the year, they have these thing of the year, story of the year, that kind of stuff. Well, I've come up with my cool thing of 2014 was Edward Snowden, S-N-O-W-D-E-N. Here's a quick pop quiz. Who is Edward Snowden? Probably 6 months ago, we all knew his name was in the paper. Today, just today going forward, as they say, just see how often you see Edward Snowden. If anything, you'll see a phrase like Snowden's revelations, but they won't say anything about them. They'll be referring to him, giving you context, so you're like, oh yeah, that's the guy. And then you move on with the story, whatever the random story is. This was the guy who used to work at the NSA who systematically... Who knows how he did it? I haven't even read any of the details of what this guy actually did or how he did it. But I think he realized he was part of a monstrous thing and he wanted to blow the whistle. And, you know, there was a time when you could whistle blow. You know, in Canada, you know, they have the ombudsman. You go there when you have a complaint about a company or whatever. You know, there was a time when we could complain about things. Nowadays, when you complain about something, you're just as likely to be thrown in prison. And I'm not kidding. You'll be sued when you complain about something. So I think Snowden realized that there was no one he could turn to, except he could systematically reveal all the secrets that he was privy to. He could reveal those to everyone. And that's what he did. In the history of America, what this guy did was, it made him an ultimate patriot. Because the NSA is a treasonous organization. The people controlling us are treasonous people. And you know, the penalty for treason is supposed to be death. Right now, the penalty for treason is these big companies become bigger. The people who control us have a tighter noose around our neck. Edward Snowden was a shining star of last year. And unless you went and got his documents, wherever they are, I have no idea. You can kiss any references to this guy, any juicy, meaty, actual information references. You can kiss them all goodbye. The media spin on this is complete. And it just becomes a reason to buy a newspaper or to click on a story, but there will be nothing revealed in the future. It reminds me of the book 1984, George Orwell. A tremendously good predictor of the future and how horrible it was going to be. But what was interesting was when the year 1984 came around, I remember the lack of fuss that was made at that time. It was a non-event. Well, guess why? I mean, today we can easily see because we realize that the press is completely corrupt. All top press everywhere is completely corrupt. Even my local, the local newspaper where I live, it's corrupt. I sent in a story about something and didn't even get a courtesy reply. As if to say, you know, we'll look into it or thanks. It was about wireless radiation. It was about a very large building near where I live, irradiating the population in this area at a level that's actually illegal. The FCC in America has a limit of how intense microwave radiation can be. That limit, by the way, is 1,000 to 10,000 times too high, but they do have a limit. This building is irradiating the people who are immediately next to it at levels 2.5 times higher than the legal maximum. Did anyone do anything about it? Absolutely not. It's really something else, man. But anyway, 20, 30, 40 years ago, we thought we had a chance with the press. You'd write a letter to the editor. I know some people that, you know, personally know them where they wrote a lot of letters to the editor. They had a slight voice. Nowadays, there's no voice. That's why, Twitter, that's the purpose behind Twitter and Facebook, is to get everyone publishing so that there's so much noise that the average person can no longer sift through the noise. It's like having fireworks every night, like having a circus in town every night while you sit on your couch. That's what they want. We're there. We are there. So the uncool thing of 2014, the absolute worst thing that I saw last year, was Wired. Wired magazine, Wired.com. There was a time when Wired was progressive. I remember. When the internet started, Wired was right in the thick of things. They even had their own search engine. I want to say it was Hotwired. Someone hopefully will correct me, but I forget the name of their search engine. But it was pretty good. There was a website I was promoting at the time, the Caballerians website. And I remember getting an email from them. It was either to me or to someone else, and they showed me. They were saying they had always liked the website. And, you know, this is a time where the good people were acknowledged and big organizations were run by good people. Having watched these stories and read the stories on Wired this last year, I'm almost sick to my stomach how horrible Wired has become. For the last 6 months, nonstop, they've been promoting the Internet of Things. Wireless radiation for everybody. Just one of the many repulsive articles on Wired that sort of triggered me wanting to give them my uncool thing of the year award. Story headline, no, the NSA isn't like the Stasi, and comparing them is treacherous. Well, the Stasi was the East German secret police. And the reality is the NSA is exactly like the Stasi. Identical. So now let's see, let's watch their spin. quote, ever since Edward Snowden released thousands of documents, the NSA's mass surveillance of domestic phone calls and internet traffic has been widely compared to the abuses of East Germany's secret police. So first of all, one is surveillance and one is abuses. Okay, that's bias. So my comment, this Wired article will now try to show how different they are. All right, let's put our seatbelts on and let's see how different they are. The closest this Wired story comes to the truth is observing the operational differences between the Stasi and the NSA. And of course, if the Stasi had access to the computers of today, they would be identical to the NSA. The Stasi, the secret police, you know, before Gorbachev and tear down this wall, that was all basically pre-computer, essentially, and certainly pre-internet. Pre-computer connecting as a big deal. It doesn't matter if, you know, three universities were doing it. We're not talking about three universities. We're talking about ubiquitous surveillance when people have devices on them all the time. You can track someone with their cell phone, every text, every phone call, it's all logged. This is 100% tracking. This is, using a number, I would say this is a million times worse than the Stasi. But the article is trying to make it seem like it's better. Quote, that's why the comparison is so treacherous. Is the word treacherous the right word? Even if the NSA was better than the Stasi, and there's absolutely no evidence of that, would the right word be treacherous? No, you'd say that's why the comparison is so wrong. But with treacherous, you don't engage people's rational mind so they can weigh right and wrong. Treacherous is a fear word. When you put a fear word in, then people aren't rational. That's what you want, right? This article is designed to keep people afraid and cowering on their couch as they watch some dumb reality show. Or worse, some primetime drama or comedy. That's why the comparison is so treacherous. It diminishes the horror of the Stasi's targeted or oppression. Okay, so now it's targeted oppression. Oh, well, if you surveil everybody all the time, everywhere, that's not targeted. Oh, well, what a relief. While downplaying the threat posed to our democracy by the NSA's secret surveillance. See, now, within that sentence, they're inconsistent. So they're saying, comparing them diminishes the horror of the Stasi. Well, first of all, why does it diminish it? That's stupid. Second, while downplaying the threat posed by the NSA. Well, hang on. So the NSA is a threat. The Stasi was obviously a threat. So they're the same. But you're trying to imply that it's different in some way. The NSA's tactics and techniques may not be anything like the Stasi's yet. Well, they're identical. But its invisibility, technical expertise, and lack of oversight make it dangerous in a different way. No. It's power. It's the same kind of power, and it's abused exactly the same kind of way for the same kind of reasons. One group has all the money, they want to keep it that way, period. Quote, right now the NSA's domestic surveillance is indiscriminate. Indiscriminate meaning they're just, you know, it's like a sane fishing boat where they just rake everything into the net. They're not discriminating, supposedly. So I say, who says it is indiscriminate? They're looking for threats. And there's one level of threat that we care about, in quotes. Think of the children. There's a rapist on the loose. Get that guy. They're recording everything. They're worried who is a threat, who is an activist, who is someone that might have a really good idea and make a lot of money and be a threat to one of their industries. They are into everything, and they're just not going to tell you. I mean, that's the whole point of secret organizations, and I'm thinking specifically of spy organizations like from the World War II style of spying. The whole point of them is to not tell you what they're doing. That is the whole entire point, and they never stop not telling you. So saying it's indiscriminate, you're trying to soften something. That's what you're trying to do. With a word that there's nothing to prove that the word is true. So they're saying it's indiscriminate, and we're told aimed solely at preventing another 9/11. Well, they caused 9/11. The 1% caused 9/11. The 1% demolished buildings. The 1%, they had an asbestos problem. The World Trade Center, I wonder if anyone knows this anymore. The Twin Towers, when they were being built, they just sprayed on asbestos. They didn't use non-asbestos materials, and they just sprayed it on. The worst thing about asbestos was, it's not so much that the fiber is bad, it's that the fiber, when it's not sealed, is bad. In other words, you could have something where there was asbestos, and you know it was laminated, say, with plastic around it for some reason. You would get the fire-resistant qualities of the asbestos, and then you would... The laminate would stop the particles of asbestos from floating through the air. I mean, admittedly, asbestos is messy stuff. Well, they just sprayed it on the girders and whatnot of the Twin Towers. So that was all coming due. They were going to have to do something about that. They had an enormous white elephant on their hands. They also had a lack of renters in the Twin Towers. Those are super expensive buildings to not be fully renting out. So they had a problem. And then, interestingly, the guy Silverman, I think his name was, that just comes to mind, Larry Silverman, I don't remember, but something like that. He had an insurance policy that the specific clause in his policy said, like, if there was a terrorist attack, he was covered. But if the terrorists attacked the buildings twice, he got double the insurance money. Well, what an interesting clause. Why would you have that clause in there? So, of course, they supposedly attacked both towers, right? You know, you can radio control a plane. The amount of proof that we have of anything is remarkably low. It appears, based only on videotapes that I've seen, which are secondhand information, it appears that airplanes hit the towers, but it's simply not hard to control them by radio. Also, let's say you had one person in there, and the guy had a family and kids, and he had a terminal illness, and he's like, if I do this, you'll give my family $50 million. And they're like, okay. He deliberately flies the plane in. One guy. There's no reason to believe any part of this story, because we know with absolute engineering certainty the buildings were demolished. Boom, 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 boom. The puffs of smoke coming out the windows. The sound. The firemen down in the lobby telling you exactly the sound, the demolition sound. So this NSA surveillance has nothing to do with 9/11. In fact, the opposite. 9/11 was a false flag operation, a fake operation, which allows them to benefit. They do these all the time. False flags, you know, when it comes to the big operations, the biggest things where people get murdered and all that, it's almost invariably a false flag, a fake thing. And you can tell easily. The latest one is that publication in France that supposedly, you know, some terrorists supposedly came in and killed a bunch of people. That publication was the raunchiest, most disgusting publication on the face of the earth. I've seen the stories that they used to run and everything. This was a cesspool, a mental cesspool of a publication. And so they run some cesspool pictures of Muslims, supposedly, and supposedly Muslims retaliate. I completely doubt every bit of that. That publication was so disgusting and low and reprehensible, etc., that nobody cared. No good people cared about that publication. There were no Arabs going, I'm incensed. This disgusting publication has printed something disgusting. No one's doing that. This is a false flag. Anyone can go in and kill a bunch of people. And you can, in the case of like Sirhan Sirhan in America, it was known that the CIA, the brainwashing people, they brainwashed the guy, and he didn't know what he was doing when he did what he was programmed to do. It's simply not hard to do this stuff. And it gets easier as time goes on. It doesn't get harder. Back to the story quote. But how do we know, and what guarantees it will stay that way? Oh, so this is how Wired is giving the NSA a free ride, that it's indiscriminate, they're not targeting anybody. They're trying to prevent a 9/11. And then their little, supposedly we're on your side statement. How do we know, and what guarantees that it will stay that way? Well, since everything you said is wrong, it doesn't need to stay that way. Or if it stays that way, the problem will stay that way. So I say total article fail, typical of Wired in 2014, the year Wired turned into a cheerleader for the Internet of Things and the 1%. So that's my little opinion piece. I've been hearing over and over again, there's opinion right now on the street that things are going very bad financially and the whole system could collapse. I'm thinking, just my intuition, that the collapse, if there is one, won't be a full collapse. I think that the 1% doesn't make as much money from a full collapse as from keeping the system going. A controlled demolition is more like it, in other words. What they want is, like, they're looking for the money of the system. They want to keep the system controlled. They want to have all the money, but then they also want to suck the value out of the system. Like in 1929, the most classic depression collapse, that was all caused by it. They held back the money, the banks held back the money. I'm trying to remember exactly why they did it. It might have been a bit of a power play with the government, but it's also done cyclically. They know the cycles. Like right now, we're in a down. We're in the down of a down of a down. There's three levels kind of thing. And this is the down part of the cycle. The up part of the last cycle was the computer revolution. And in other eras, like 100 years ago, the up was like the railway era. That might have been two major cycles ago. And there's up parts and there's down parts. 1929 depression was a down part. So we might get one of those somewhat like that, but I don't think it'll be nearly that bad. Because when everyone is poor and they're just living hand to mouth, how do the trillionaires, what's their source of income? When we make no money, and the money we make goes to paying for food to put in our mouth, they can't skim anything from that. Right now they have a great thing. We're all slaves. They have a fantastic system right now. To me, it's so good, they don't want to change that. So the next thing they want to do, and I'm pretty sure they want to do this, is they want to kill 95% of us off. That's the last main profit area for them. So microwave radiation, perfect. It's going to do it. Absolutely, very effectively going to do it. It does take, 7 years for those cancers to develop, and we've been getting dosed pretty heavily for, a few years, depends who you are and where you live. But Internet of Things now is going to ensure that everyone everywhere is dosed all the time. So within 7 years, I think a whole bunch of people are going to die. So there's more money to them from us dying than from us walking around on the streets making a dollar a day and putting food in our mouths. There's no profit for them. But if we die and a whole bunch of us die and markets, like let's say housing market collapses, right? Because everyone wants to sell their house. The guy dies, so we want to sell his house. While everyone else is selling their house, no one wants to buy. The prices will collapse. So I think the next big grab will be a whole bunch of people die. They'll also put some other draconian economic measures in so that those of us that are alive will be desperate and struggling, and we're going to be losing our houses even while we're alive. They will snap up all the housing and the property, and now they have everything. They have all the money, and they will have 90% of all the property. Then how much force do we have? If we think we have no force today, that's one prediction you can make for the future. Less and less influence by good people on life. That's a bullseye prediction. And honestly, it's going to get hard. It's going to get hard to want to live around the 1%. You're going to have to be corrupt yourself. And there will always be people who will fight to be corrupt. They'll fight with each other so that they can be higher on the pecking order of corrupt people. Absolutely. But for those trying to do good and be good and, just to do honorable things, it will become more and more pointless. A great mind said that Western civilization is finished. There's nothing we can do about it. They've sown the seeds of their own destruction. Well, this is all absolutely true. You can't have a complete lie. Life today is a complete lie. It's not a partial lie or a partial conspiracy or one conspiracy every 50 years. It's a million conspiracies every second. You can't have that system and ultimately prevail. Those trillionaires will ruin it, basically. If the trillionaires were content to actually live with their trillions, the system would have a chance. But the whole point is that these top people, the richest people, are crazy. They have no control of themselves. They are a broken record, playing the same track over and over again, making the same ruthless decisions over and over again. They are incapable of change. So at some point, you're going to be surrounded by 1%ers. You're going to be the servant class. There are going to be a lot of robots. So a lot of things are automated, but they will need someone to polish their nails and to cook them an expensive meal and to wave a fan up and down so they feel comfortable. There will be a few non-1%ers needed. And those would possibly be people who aren't crazy. But I think eventually everyone has to go crazy because the system is not sane. It's not human. It's not rational. And everyone will sell out to the system. So this story, and it's just one of many stories, bankrupt government slashing payments to doctors by 43%, Medicare patients to be rejected nationwide. Well, Natural News, this is from Natural News. They have sort of an ongoing dislike, it seems, of Obamacare. Doctors are overpaid. Being slashed by 43% is not the end of the world. Some will not like it. There was another story yesterday saying that there's going to be suicides amongst doctors. Well, that's just karma. What doctors do to patients is criminal as it is, so that's just karma coming back. This Obamacare is just another way they've figured out to lower everyone down to the servant class. Even doctors now are going to be heading to the servant class. Another story, more doctors confessing to intentionally diagnosing healthy people with cancer to make money. So this is a guy, Dr. Fareed Fata, prominent cancer doctor, admitted in court 1 year ago to intentionally and wrongfully diagnosing healthy people with cancer. Fata also admitted to giving them chemotherapy drugs for the purpose of making a profit. $35 million fraud scheme. He had multiple treatment centers, Michigan Hematology Oncology Centers in Clarkston, Bloomfield Hills, Lapeer, Sterling Heights, Troy, and Oak Park. According to the government, this guy had a patient load of 1,200 people and received $62 million from Medicare, but he billed for $150 million. The U.S. attorney said she plans to seek life in prison for this guy, calling his case the most egregious healthcare fraud case her office has seen. Well, of course, fluoridation is the most egregious case. She said Fata not only built the government, which is typical, but he also harmed patients. What's interesting is this guy confessed in court to doing this, and he was advised not to confess, and he did it over and over again. Let's look at his name, Fareed 112, Fata 281. Well, the 281, we've seen a lot of negative stories over the last few weeks where the person had a 281 combination. They say fine as long as you're agreeing with them. It's just a very discordant, turned-around combination. I can see a combination like that doing something like this. 112, the first name, it's like the name Larry. The 112, they're like an artful dodger. They're concerned with how they look. They want the opposite gender to look at them. Well, he has that in both names. The last name, 281, there's the 2 and the 1 again. Add them all together, though. 393 total, 3 destiny. The three quality is they love people, they love life. And this guy, his discordant first two names, was pushing him to do stuff that was purely selfish. I think that's probably the best way to summarize this guy. He was purely selfish. He found a way to be purely selfish and to exploit the system. But his threes ultimately went, hey, I got to talk about this. I got to live with myself. All those tens of millions of dollars of fraud, I can't live with that. I have to talk about it. I have to confess. This guy was confessing not to get a lesser sentence. He was confessing because he felt so bad. To me, that's apparent. There was a story just a couple days ago, and this was like a follow-on story. Campbellsville Fire Department fined $25,000 over deadly ALS Ice Bucket Challenge accident. So I guess this earlier story, Captain Tony Grider died 30 days after the August 21 accident. The accident happened last August at Campbellsville's University, where members of the fire department were helping the university's marching band with this ice bucket challenge. So basically they were using like a ladder truck to spray water or dump water onto the marching band people. So like it's a large scale ice bucket challenge. This guy and another guy, Simon Quinn, were occupying the bucket portion of the aerial ladder truck being used for the university's public affairs event when they crossed the, quote, electric energy threshold, quote, of an overhead power line. They got too close. That caused an electric arc to strike both firefighters. Let's look at their names, because only one guy died out of this, but you'll see there are four people involved, four fire department people involved. So Tony Grider, the guy that died, Tony, 6'2", Grider, 527, accident looking for a place to happen. Total of Tony Grider's name, 279 total, 9 destiny, the losing destiny. And by the way, as Anthony Grider, and no doubt he was born Anthony, Anthony 797. Oh, I just realized the 7 is electricity. My sister, with the same 527 combination, she attracted a bizarre accident with electricity. Well, as Anthony 797, so there's two more sevens, Grider 527, total 325, total 5 destiny. So even with his full name, he had a 5 destiny, and he had way more sevens. So this guy died by a 7-ish electricity accident. The guy who was with them in the bucket, I guess he's in, one of them was in critical condition, and one of them was fair condition. I think this Simon Quinn's in fair condition, so he survived. Simon 617. So the guy's with him in the ladder truck, what do they call it, the bucket portion of the ladder truck. He has a 7. And then Quinn, last name, 393. Now, again, we just did a 393, the love of people. These guys, I mean, Tony Grider had a 279 total. 279, that's a very generous, giving people person. Very emotional, but he would have loved doing what he was doing. And then Simon Quinn, this guy would also love being around people and seeing them happy, doing something fun, you know, a little bit spontaneous or surprising. What's Simon Quinn's total? 911 total, one destiny. We've talked about the one destiny, hard things happen to you. Quoting from the story, this is, I think, from the earlier story. Captain Steve Mars, age 37, an 11-year veteran, and 3-year veteran Alex Johnson, assumed control of the apparatus in an attempt to lower it to the ground. Now they're trying to lower the ladder truck after these guys have been electrocuted. Mars and Johnson suffered electrical shocks from currents traveling down the extended ladder. So now two other guys step in and they get jolted. What are their combinations? Steve, 178, very strong combination, no problem there. Mars, 156, strong, positive, no problem there. You can see a Steve Mars being a fire department guy. You could see that guy being, like they say, 11-year veteran. You can see that by his numbers. But add the two names together, 235 total, 5 destiny. The other guy, Alex Johnson, Alex 696, you know, this is a salt of the earth, reliable guy. Johnson 325, there's another 5. Every one of these people had either a 1 destiny or 5s around. And of course, the guy who died had the worst name, and the worst thing happened to him. Something I did, I think it was last Saturday. I was watching the football, and I was, just for fun, I wanted to record everyone, every player's name. And then, because they're sports people, famous sports people, you can go to Wikipedia and you can get their birthday, so then I could work out their cycle. So I did this, and you quickly see a pattern. Even though I looked at about 20 different people, so I should have had all 9 cycles. On average, I should have had 2 people from each cycle. Some cycles, 2 of the cycles, weren't even represented at all. And amongst the players who were playing really well, you would see consistently they'd be in the same cycle, or one of 2 good cycles. So in a 1 cycle last Saturday was Colin Jones. Now this guy I hadn't even heard of before, but he made a really good sack. And you know, you just suddenly realize this guy, wow, he was pretty impressive. Well, his name, 628-279-898, super successful name. And he was in a 1 cycle. A testy month, 4 or 5 month, and a 5-9 day, not the greatest day, but I would say in his case, you know, his name made him stand out. Now in the 3 cycle, there's a whole bunch of people. Darrell Rivas, yeah, he had a really challenging game. He had 2 penalties all year, then he had 2 penalties in that 1 game. Let's work out his cycle. His cycle is really amazing. So he was born July 14, 1985. To work out a cycle, you take the month, July 7, day 14, which is a 5, then the year, 2015, and then you add 1 to be predictive. He was and is in a 3 cycle year, 6-9 month, 7-4 days. So 6-9 month, first of all, it's an indefinite month. We've actually seen a number of stories where someone was in either a 6-9 month or a 9-6 month. There was a girl who killed herself and she was in like a 6-9 month last year. Or it might have been a 9-6, but as I say, the same 2 numbers. And there was numerous stories like that. So then a test day. And then what was really, really interesting, I wanted to work out what were his hours that day. Because this Darrell Rivas is one of the greatest cornerback cover guys there is. He was in a 3-1 hour, then a 4-2, a 5-3, and a 6-4. Okay, 2 of those hours had the 4 in them, so they're absolute test hours the whole hour. The other ones have a 3 in them, they're a test hour for the latter half of the hour. In other words, out of 4 hours, you have 3 hours of test. He was in almost pure test hours of a test day. And then even the month, there's no support there. There's no strength there. It's a 9-month, you lose month. So he was, And I guess he wasn't the only one. Oh, the next guy. The cool thing with the cycle and factoring that in is you can compare and contrast and you can see why some people, even though they're in the same cycle, they didn't fare as badly. Like the next guy here, Doug Baldwin, he scored a touchdown. He's born September 21, 1988. He's also in that 3-year, 6-9 month, 7-4 day. But he has a 3 first strength. So for Darrell or anybody else, they're not 3-ish and it doesn't work with them. This guy has a 3 strength, and the cycle is just more harmonious with him. The next guy also in the 3 cycle, Randall LaDonald Cobb II. And you should have heard the announcements. I typed in some of the comments. Outstanding job by Randall Cobb. Unbelievable play. Outstanding catch. You know. Now this guy played the next day. So same cycle 3 year, which was a test day on Saturday. This guy, Randall Cobb, played on Sunday. So instead of being a 7-4 day, he was in an 8-5 day. Similarly, Andrew Luck, quarterback for the Colts. The Colts came in and beat Denver Broncos. One of the biggest upsets last week. Andrew Luck, the quarterback, was in an 8-5 day. All right, who was in a 4 cycle last week? Russell Wilson, the quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks. Now, Seattle Seahawks are just maybe the greatest team ever in my mind right now. It's hard to bet against them. Still, you can have one player, a key player, who's in a bad cycle, right? So Russell Wilson, born November 29, 1988, 4-cycle year. 7-2 month, 8-6 day. I say in the notes, that 4-cycle year is a doozy. Everything gets tested in a 4 year. I'm in the same cycle. I say, I sure notice cars trying to hit me when I'm driving this year. Like, really? It's a real phenomenon. You really need to know your cycle. All right, people in the 5-cycle were all in. Well, on Saturday they were in a good day, and then on Sunday they weren't. So here's Gregory Olson. Just made a big catch, made another great one in the fourth quarter. He was in the 9-8 day. And then we have Aaron Rodgers, the quarterback for Green Bay Packers. He played on Sunday. He was now in a 1-9 day. He struggled. He had an injury. He literally lost the ball like he fumbled. And then one of the announcers said, Aaron Rodgers is not Aaron Rodgers today. And in an 8-4 month, Aaron Rodgers, and I remember some of my past experiences were, with the 8 and the 4 together, it can be an expensive test. That's the way I remember it, describe it. Now, people in the 6th cycle, and there was 4 of them, they all had a good day. Well, what cycle were they in? 6 year, 9-6 month, 1 day. You're in straight cycles in a 9 month, so every day is just that one number. Well, when you're in a 1 day, the 1 is that power, it's physical. I mean, football, that's football, right? It's a physical power, it's a physical sport. And so I say in my notes, people who were in the 6th cycle in that 1 day, they were in a great cycle day for football. So Richard Sherman, he played phenomenal, made an interception. That's a big deal. Turnovers are a big part of the game. Jonathan Stewart, same cycle, has a scary good run. Almost broke it all the way. Another great run, never quit, amazing. Those are some of my notes on this guy. Mario Addison, never even heard of this guy. Made a great sack. And then Pete Carroll, the coach for the Seattle Seahawks, was in a good cycle day. So even though the quarterback for Seattle was in a very bad cycle, the coach was in a very good cycle. So they won. Go down the list, Cam Newton. He lost. Carolina lost on, I believe, Saturday. But Cam Newton had a great game. He did a sort of a genius shovel pass, as it's called. He put his body in the line. He was playing physically. What was his cycle? 7-cycle year, 1-8 month. The one on the 8 together makes a super tough, tough as nails type person. And super determined, motivated to succeed. But he was in a 2-3 day in the latter half, and sure enough, he lost the game. But I considered that Cam Newton had a career day. He played that good last week. And the color commentator basically said the same thing. Oh, and speaking of career days, in the same cycle as Cam Newton, Cameron Chancellor for Seattle Seahawks, he basically made the difference. 7-cycle, 1-8 month, and this guy's a 7 for strength, so the 7 year is harmonious with his strength, his inner number. He had a completely amazing game. He blocked a field goal, did all kinds of great tackles. He was just everywhere. He was the player of the match. Fantastic interception, ran 89 yards for a touchdown. And sure enough, this 7-cycle, as it turns out, was basically the best, or one of the best cycles that everyone was in. There was a Luke Wilson who scored a touchdown, same cycle. People in the 8th cycle were struggling. Marshawn Lynch, the great running back for Seattle, was in the test cycle. His runs, I described them as ineffective in the first quarter. Then he had a massive run, I forget when, but later in the game. But he stepped out part of the way through it, and half the run was just taken away. His cycle was 8 year, 2 1-month, 3 5-day latter half. So disappointments in the latter half of a 3 day, and there he was. I'm sure that he did not have the game he wanted to have. Paul Richardson made a great play. Then he was injured on the next play. And it appeared to be like a joints injury. And he's in a 3-5 day. The three is the joints. Jeremy Lamar Mincy made a great sack. I looked up his info. He promptly made another big sack. Then the color commentator started praising how well he has played this year. Well, this year was the latter part of a 7-year and into the 8. That's cyclically the strongest part of the 9-year cycle. And also, while he was in the 8th cycle in the 2-1 month, he wasn't in the 3-5 day, he was in the 4-6. And we've talked about the 4 and 6 together, the 6 bringing out the best of the 4, the 4-6 combination doing more than their share of the work. Well, if you just judge by what the commentators were saying, this guy was doing more than his share. Another guy also in that 4-6 day, 2-1 month, 8-year, Terrence Tyrone Williams, scored a TD, made it look easy. There's only one person in a 9 cycle, and looked good early. But he was in a 9-cycle, 3-month, 5-8 day. Oh, and that guy who looked good, he was playing on Sunday. And no one was in that I noticed who was playing well with was standing out in the 9-cycle last Saturday, which was the 4-7 day, a testy day. So that wasn't a statistically large enough sample by itself. It was about 20 people when you probably need 200. But it wouldn't be hard to do. And you could analyze, in theory you could analyze everybody, but you quickly see the patterns with the cycles. There was something happened last year, and I wanted to give a real shout-out to this guy. I might as well do it now. It's a good time. Another sports story. Menelik Watson donates game check while Oakland Raiders surprise 4-year-old heart patient. This guy donated his game check. Now, you'll see that's a lot of money. But when someone does a huge donation, you look for the 8 quality. The 8 is the philanthropist on the big scale. The Rockefeller mentality, you might say. Or Bill Gates. Bill Gates has donated billions. Now, when you sort of analyze it, there's a creepy underbelly to what Gates is doing with vaccinations and whatnot. But he has donated billions. Bill, 988. There's the 8 quality. To understand the bill, think of the phrase, big bill. They want to give, but they want to give in a big way. All right, so what's this guy's name? Menelik? 156, Watson, 742, 898 total, 8 destiny. And by the way, his uniform number is 71, which is an 8. He's born December 22nd, 1988, so his birthday numbers are 3, 4, 8, 4, 6. 6 under a 3. Well, some of the most generous numbers are the 6 and the 3. They're very humanitarian numbers. They care very deeply about others. His game check donation, someone worked it out. It works out to $18,000. As someone pointed out, you don't get paid every week in football. You get paid by the game. There's only 16 regular season games. So you might be making, $250,000 a year, but it comes in 16 chunks. And so he gave one of those 16 chunks to this person. In another story, I find out the child's name, Ava Uria. Ava or Ava, 246. Urea, U-R-R-E-A, 999. The 9 being the accidents, tragedies, and losses combination. Just looking up a bit more, this Menelik Watson, very unusual person, he was born in England. He used to play soccer. He suffered a major injury in 2001, which ended his soccer chances. Quote, advised by a doctor not to play any more sports, he eventually joined the school basketball team, where he was spotted by an American coach, Rob Orellana, who signed him up for his basketball academy based in the Canary Islands. So he goes from soccer to basketball to football. This coach so impressed this guy, he named his daughter Orellana in honor of his mentor and coach. There was a thumbs down story recently. Dr. Oz has been targeted lately. Dr. Oz, occasionally gives out medical suggestions that aren't mainstream medicine. Let me tell you, these days when you do anything that isn't exactly what they want, you get attacked. Well, this Oz, they're attacking him all over the place. Supposedly they did a review of all of his recommendations for some block of them, like several hundred or whatever, 500 of them, pardon me, and found at least half of them had no medical basis. Well, that's a good thing. Regular medicine is people getting very rich, giving you things that sometimes will make you better and sometimes will kill you. That's regular medicine. And the naturopathic way is, frankly, always the best way. And the only exception is when you need to cut. You know, if you broke a bone and you need to have your bone set, then you need a mechanical process. Similarly, let's say you have a rupture, an internal rupture, your spleen or gallbladder, something goes, blows. Then you need to be cut open and that needs to be repaired mechanically. That isn't the time to start drinking herb tea. You need an operation. But for the most part, you don't need that stuff. And especially if you live healthily, if you live preventatively, you just simply don't go to the doctor. It's completely avoidable. Anyway, so I got some links on this guy. It's sort of hard to have a stomach for this stuff, what they're trying to do to this Dr. Oz. It's really pretty sickening. And I guess this happened before. There was a story from 4 years ago where they attacked Dr. Oz. Imagine the nerve of somebody trying to suggest natural cures. Natural things are cheaper, healthier, actually work rather than suppressing symptoms and basically doing bizarre things to you. I mean, chemotherapy is the ultimate in bizarre, attack yourself to save yourself kind of stuff. And what they don't tell you is after you do these bizarre treatments, what you have to do for the rest of your life. It's like when you get an organ transplant. What they don't maybe fully impress upon you is that for the rest of your life, you're going to be taking immunosuppressant drugs. Otherwise, your body would reject the new organ. Well, if you're taking immunosuppressant drugs the rest of your life, you have a weakened immune system. Well, the family of things that can happen to you because of a weakened immune system is off the charts. Well, the point is, with so many organs, you can rebuild the organ. One of the few you can't is your eyes, but most you can. In other words, if you change, make a whole bunch of changes, healthy changes, get rid of the meat and balance your name and develop a serious water habit and take Senna for your elimination. Make sure your elimination is actually working and not just plugged up. And by the way, Senna, the medical profession will give out Senna. They just don't give it out as a first line recommendation. When someone is like gone 3 days and they haven't gone, then they'll prescribe the Senna. It's really interesting. It is there. It's absolutely there. I've given it to clients. They just don't give it preventatively. There's no money in prevention. Give it out just to keep them alive. Keep that paycheck coming. Patient care, client care is so disgusting. The more you know, the more disgusting it is. I got one other story in this grouping of stories. I'm just sort of going down my file. The headline, the superfans using stats to get to the bottom of cereal. Cereal was this ludicrous podcast that has become ridiculously popular because it doesn't threaten anybody. So I say in my notes, more cereal stupidity. This article was on 538.com. And I say, if 538.com can't make sense of it, no one can. Anyway, I'm going to get to my of the weeks. I should say that yesterday I was helping plant trees once again. My wife and I did that. It was pouring rain, challenging conditions. And we had a lot of green people standing around talking. I had to really take charge. I sort of became the expert after only doing it once or twice before. We got it all done. Got home, got in the shower and warmed up. Every part of me was wet. I'm in the test year, so I got quite tested. Well, I have to give myself a fail for my clothing choices. I chose clothing that would absorb water. Wool will be warm on the inside while it's still wet. Even my cap, my hat, my toque, as the Canadians call them. My toque was a plastic artificial fabric, and it just got soaked with water, and it was so soaked there was like a cup of water in it. But it wasn't warm anymore. Anyway, I just got about as wet as I've ever gotten in my life, and it's physically challenging. There wasn't very many strong people there, so I was stepping in doing a lot more of the heavy lifting, and I feel one of my shoulders today, previous injury there. I think I'll be all right, but I'm kind of beat up a little bit. It's a great cause. This organization in this area has planted 500,000 trees in 25 years. Right now they have a thing where if you want to get a tree, it's half price, $25 for a tree. If you figure a tree lasts 100 years, $25 divided by 100 years is 25 cents a year. A tree is essentially free on average, but you have to buy it now and the rewards are later. And so what's really interesting is in this area, It's sort of a more progressive area, and so people are into trees. But throughout the country, people are not into trees. And even in this area, apparently, there are a lot of people that are very anti-tree. They'll move into a place, they'll chop the trees down. Oh, it's a mess. They didn't want to have to deal with it. It's really kind of mind-blowing. If you want to measure the health of a place, look at the trees. That will tell you very clearly what kind of people you're dealing with and whether you really want to live there or not. There are just so many benefits of trees. And truly, if you really care about the future, and there's not much evidence that many of us care, there's not much evidence of that at all, but if you really do care, plant a tree. Okay, last Monday, I was doing my Costco trip, usual time, everything normal, coming home, everything normal. I know the lights are green. I know the lights in front of me, the next two lights are going to be green, going along. Suddenly in front of me, coming out from the right, from the cross traffic that's at a red light, suddenly a car shot into the intersection in front of me, about three cars in front of me. And it happens quickly, and you process it quickly, but your mind, your thoughts are slow. And I started thinking, wait, what? That can't be. Is he going to get through? Of course, I'm having those thoughts, and those thoughts take a few seconds, but it was all over. I mean, it started and it ended in a matter of, 2 seconds. And sure enough, a nice young person driving a Scion, a very small Scion. I think it's like the IQ or something like that. It's one of those super small cars, like the smart car. She was going along the main road, and then on the side street was a guy who was probably 75 or 80 years old, driving like a, it might have been a Toyota, doesn't really matter. And he said, the light turned green, so I went. Well, I pulled over right away because I saw what happened. I knew that he was in the wrong, and it can be a bit of a nightmare trying to get your insurance straightened out if you don't have proof that the guy in the wrong was in the wrong. So I went straight to the girl. She was, sort of a little, in shock, kind of crying a little bit and just, trying to recover from it. She was totally okay. Her car, this little car, you might think a little car doesn't protect you, but these modern little cars, they really do. They have a roll cage. They're basically built like a portable roll cage. The smart car is the same way. This thing, even though she had a high-speed accident, she was going 50. The other guy shot out at probably 20. There was some high speed there. She had like a dent on the front right of her car that was ridiculously small. And even his car did pretty good too. Sort of a lesson about modern cars. It's all very well to want an old car because older cars are simpler and they will last longer. But in that situation, two old cars, it would have been death and destruction. And people, there would have been probably even more cars dragged into the accident. And it would have been really grim. So score one for small, smartly designed cars. Everyone's in shock afterwards. And one thing when they're in shock is they keep repeating the same thing. So for her, you could sort of see her kind of just sort of reliving it. And that's why she was sort of a little bit teary. It was upsetting. But for the old guy, went over there and I think I was supposed to communicate something from one to the other. And there was a witness behind the old guy at the red light was another guy. And he saw the whole thing from the old guy's perspective. And this old guy, out of the blue, just bolted into the intersection on a red light. Anyway, so he came over to the girl and while I was there and said, hey, I saw everything, you're fine. It was the other guy. And I was telling her the same thing. And then we went over to the guy. We get to the guy and he's like, the light turned green, so I went. And he kept saying this. Now, part of it is, that's the when you're in shock. And when you're in shock, you have one thought and it's like your record is skipping. And you might do that until you come out of that shock gradually. It might take, 15 minutes. Just something to sort of keep in mind when you happen to be involved in a nasty bit of business is that people will just be going through one thought pattern. It won't make sense, but that's why they're doing it. They're in shock. And so I had the insurance company phoning me, her insurance company, and I explained everything to them. And I said, score one for a well-designed small car. And in my opinion, this old guy should not be on the road. I know they're recording the conversation. I'm going to get that right into the record. One of the problems in America is you can drive at any age, period. In Canada, I remember my grandmother, when she was over 61, once she turned 65, every year she had to go and do a test, a driving test. Through your middle years of life, you can, once you get your license, that's it, you're fine. But then once she got 65, it might have been every 5 years she had to do the test. And then once she turned, 75 or 80, then it was every year. Well, that's exactly what you need. There's no way that this old guy would pass the test. But here, America, there's no test. I've cared for clients that are really old, that want to drive. One day I'm supposed to be driving them, and then you come along and they're in the driver's seat, That's a weakness of the system. And so you're going to have people dying on the roads just because old people don't have to take their driver's test every 5 years or every year based on age. To me it seems reasonable, maybe at age 75. Once you turn 75, you shouldn't have to take your test every year. Make it easy. Maybe just make it a road test or make it reasonable. It can be kind of intimidating even as a young person to take these tests. They have so many rules. The rules are changing. The rules change. I mean, that's in itself, it's kind of crazy, but such is the way it is, I guess. That's my bad, driver. So I don't attract too many accidents, but, I just realized. So I attract an accident, seeing an accident. I'm in a 4-year. Neil deGrasse Tyson is in the news. This is the guy that did the Cosmos series. He's a physicist. And I guess he has a podcast called Star Talk Radio Show. And this is supposedly some big deal. He's going to be turning it into like a late night talk show. So I thought, let's go to his website, and if I can download and listen to one of these, let's listen to this guy's podcast. First of all, the first 2 minutes is commercials. He's got some guest host, some random person. And I guess this was like an end of the year one. It's called Season 5 Time Capsule Part 2. And I guess the idea is you go through the year and you supposedly you take questions from people, the best questions of the year. The first question is not even from what people asked last year. The first question is from the guest host who asks Neil deGrasse Tyson, what is gravity? Oh, that's beautiful. Neil says, we have no idea. We can describe gravity. We can say what it does to other things. We can measure it, predict with it. But when you start asking what it is, I don't know. Then there's sort of a bit of a period of time where he's just sort of talking randomly. And then he says, in an Einsteinian answer, gravity is the curvature of space and time. And objects will follow the curvature. And we interpret this as gravity. They have no underlying mechanism behind gravity. None. That's the answer. And this is, by the way, even in this age of the Higgs, where the Higgs particle, the Higgs field, the Higgs boson, the Higgs interaction is supposed to like be our gravity answer. He didn't talk about that. Now, why didn't he talk about it? The Higgs is a nightmare. Then what's interesting is he's going along, and this is a guy that when he talks, he's got a big smile on his face. He's very confident. He is having influence on people. He better be right. What does he say next? He says, Einstein said, space-time tells matter how to move, and matter tells space-time how to curve. Well, that was not an Einstein quote. I knew it wasn't. I look online. It was John Archibald Wheeler who came up with that quote. Well, the point is, how could you get that wrong? That's one of the most famous quotes in physics. How could you attribute it to the wrong person? And then at the 6-minute mark, he repeats the Feynman statement. What's interesting is that gravity is irrelevant to quantum physics. Well, of course, I realize that that's just simply not true. Gravity has a different effect. Gravity scales. This, the whole understanding of the four forces is wrong. And here is this guy who most would probably say this guy's like top of the field. And there were nothing but problems in this podcast and with this guy and what he was saying. I immediately just stopped listening. That's amateur hour. Making mistakes, having no explanations, and then repeating Feynman's 60-year-old bit of, quote, wisdom, quote. That's pretty pathetic. I have been reading The Perfect Theory. Actually, I have two books on the go. I'll just do this one for this week. I have a label that covers up the full name of this book, but it's something about the Century of Geniuses and the Battle Over General Relativity. Well, what makes this book interesting is this guy, author is Pedro Ferreira, he's a super Einstein fan. He's been an Einstein fan his whole life. Well, what's interesting is it means he's researched. This guy knows so many Einstein stories and so much sort of back history and so many quotes and back and forth. It's wonderful, juicy stuff, because the more you research these things, the more shocking they are. For example, with relativity, the average perception is that Einstein was a genius, he came up with relativity, that's that. Here's the reality. Others came up with relativity, Lorentz, for example, Poincaré, to the extent that for some physicists, they only give Einstein minor credit, and it was really the product of Lorentz, the Lorentz contraction. And, you know, the truth is somewhere in between. Each of these people is contributing a major component. But yeah, the more you know and study about Einstein, and I gotta say, you know, I don't have an anti-Einstein bias, but the more you research it, the more you get a quite different picture. Well, this book called The Perfect Theory, boy, if you really want to have your eyes opened about relativity, get this book. First of all, Einstein, he did his thought experiments, he had his theory, but he didn't have the math behind it. Other people helped him with the math. There was a guy, Hilbert, David Hilbert, famous physicist, genius guy, who helped him with the math. Well, I had heard from other sources that Hilbert and Einstein came up with relativity at the same time, and Hilbert was gracious and always credited Einstein. Well, the real story is Einstein and Hilbert were working on the math of it. Einstein couldn't get it, kept going to Hilbert, and then Hilbert, of course, worked on it while Einstein wasn't there and figured it out. So the mathematical breakthroughs, Hilbert was a major contributor there. History doesn't record it that way unless you get to the actual details. Well, when you read this book, you'll see even more examples like that. Even more cases where Einstein had to be bailed out by other math types, math genius types, to the extent of having assistants doing that kind of stuff. Very insightful. I have pathetic choices for my rewatch of the week, so I'm going to skip that. Uncool thing of the week, Petco still not pulling all China-made pet treats from its stores after more than 1,000 dogs die from chemical poisoning. You know, dog food, it's a real nightmare area. They recently changed the regulations so that dog food can have even more toxic stuff in it. It can now have defluorinated something or other. Defluorinated, basically waste products. Can be added to dog food. You know, part of killing off 95% of us is you got to kill off the pets too. You know, there's too many pets in the world already. If you get rid of 95% of the people, what are you going to do with the pets? You know, so they've got the hooks in place. The fluoride levels in dog food are 4 million times too high. 4 million. The levels, what they should be and what they are, it's reversed. What they should be like 1,000 times less. The regulation should be 1,000 times more strict, more like the human one. And then what they are is 1,000 times too high, even, you know, like it's, so when you multiply together, it's 4 million times. Like it's completely backwards. You want to especially avoid like bone meal or any bone type products in your dog food, because it's the bones is where the fluoride accumulates. So when they eat the bone, they're eating the fluoride. That's where the fluoride got stored. All right, cool thing of the week. Quote, a slick Macintosh design inspired by the very first Mac of all time. You got to see this. I'll have the link. This is worth looking at. It's on Wired right now. Basically, Apple designed a new Macintosh computer to look like the original. The original was that sort of boxy, lunchboxy shape with a small screen and a little floppy drive slot in the front. And it was kind of like a miniature TV, like a 13-inch TV for your kitchen kind of thing. Well, the new one has only the front portion of that. It has a flat screen. So there's a screen. It's the same size. It's a flat screen. The shape of the front of this new computer follows the old profile. They put a little fake slot on the front, so it looks, from the front, just like the old one. Very similar. But then behind it, there's nothing. There's no sides. There's no back. The whole new computer is like half an inch thick. This is beautiful. What I should do is I should keep my eyes open like 10 years from now when these things are being thrown in the trash cans. And I should grab one of these things, because these are going to be like a collector's item just for how beautiful it looks. And the brilliance of playing off of that revolutionary 20-year-old design and totally reinventing. It's kind of like the new Volkswagen versus the old Volkswagen. It was kind of an ingenious thing that they did there. So I say, once every 5 or 10 years, I have to say something nice about an Apple product. Well, this is it. They cloned the front of the first Mac, but they didn't need any of the internals. It all fits into the front shape, super cool looking. No practicality, mind you, just very cool looking. Well, that's true. Quote of the week, unlimited tolerance must lead to the disappearance of tolerance. If we extend unlimited tolerance even to those who are intolerant, if we are not prepared to defend a tolerant society against the onslaught of the intolerant, then the tolerant will be destroyed, and tolerance with them. Isn't that interesting? The way you destroy tolerance is you become unlimitedly tolerant. You know, we live in tolerant times. This is why we have spoiled kids. The parents are infinitely tolerant of what the kids do, creating three-year-old monsters. Kids are super smart at the earliest age. I recently was caring for a one-year-old. This one-year-old knows the story. They know so much. They are so sharp, so observant, can put things together so well. That means you don't want to be spoiling them. When someone is spoiled, they've got that habit of being spoiled. They didn't get it overnight. And you got to nip it in the bud. They have to know the rules, and they have to know you're not going to bend. Otherwise, once they're 3 years old, they've been like that for at least 2 years. This quote was from Karl Popper, P-O-P-P-E-R. There's a wiki page on the guide. Very, very interesting. There's someone who really thought outside the box. Good for him. Recently, I came up with another physics paper, Black Holes Revisited. I don't think I talked about it. I sure hope I didn't. Let me just check my notes. I did talk about it. All right. Can't talk about more physics. You know, this black holes thing, and realizing that a star, when it finishes burning, it completely changes what it is. It goes from being a fuel source to being a lead weight. I must say I've thought a lot more about black holes in the last week or two since doing that paper. You know, when you come up with a revelation, it really ignites your thinking. And it really is fun. So this has been Floyd Maxwell, JustThinkIt.com, doing a Floydcast number 49 for January the 19th, 2015. Good luck with your football. Take care.